Well, we only have this week and next week left in our series about these lesser-known characters of the Bible. And remember that there are several thousand of these lesser-known characters. So just to do, 10 weeks on a few of them, just scratching the surface. So this morning, we're going to begin with a test. So take out your bulletins. On the back, there is a blank part of the bulletin. Now I need you to grab a pen or a pencil. You can share. Grab one out of your wife's purse. Those red booklets that I'm sure pass every Sunday, they all have a pen in it, so you can borrow one out of there. We're going to put on some test-taking music. On the back of the bulletin, without cheating, I know how you guys are, without cheating, I want you to write the name of the 12 disciples of Jesus. Write as many as you can. You got 1 minute. Go. Twelve disciples of Jesus. No cheating. No Googling. Problem with seconds. Ten, nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one, time. So before we check the papers, and I have you all tell me how you did, I'll call on some people individually just to embarrass them. So a couple disclaimers as we talk about these 12 disciples. First disclaimer is that when I thought about doing this, I thought, well, before I ask them to do this, I better do it myself. And I missed one, and it drove me bananas until I looked it up. So that's the first disclaimer. Second, I thought, well, if I got to do it, let's have the staff do it. So Tuesday staff meeting, I said, all right, write the 12 disciples. And now you would think, this is the staff, right? Do you think anybody got all 12? No. But Daniel did argue for an 11.5. And I'll get to that one a little bit later. Nobody got them all. So, first things first. Technically speaking, Jesus had 13 disciples, not 12. So, if you didn't write 13, you already missed one. And you say, well, you said 12. That's true. He had 12 at a time. So, just be clear. He had 13 disciples. Second, what makes this such a big challenge, probably far more than it should be, is that a lot of the disciples, they go by multiple names. And even though, and I'm going to show you the four lists of the disciples, even the names in that list versus the names that you see in the narrative, there's sometimes two or three or four different names for the same guy. So it gets very confusing when you just try to write down the 12 guys. And what makes it even more confusing is that some of the names are their Hebrew names, some of the names are their Aramaic names, and some of the names are their Greek names. And it flops back and forth in the text. So for instance, John Mark, which, by the way, is not one of the disciples. John is his Hebrew name. Mark is his Greek name. Now, if you read the text, sometimes he's John, sometimes he's Mark, sometimes he's John Mark. And as you read through, it's very easy to lose track of who exactly they're talking about. And some of the disciples, they have multiple names that way, and it makes it very confusing. Third, before we get to the list, I'm sure some of you thought you're going to be a smart aleck and write your own name. Guaranteed some of you did that. James wrote his wife's name. Yeah. And, technically that's very, very true. We're all disciples of Jesus. But what I'm referring to and what we mean when we talk about the 12 disciples are the 12 men that walked around with Jesus, that saw his miracles, that hiked back and forth from Galilee back to Jerusalem and saw all that he did. And we're going to be talking a little bit about specifically, actually next week, why Jesus chose 12. Not 3, not 7, not 10, 12. But we're going to talk about that next week. But it's very clear that Jesus chose 12. It's a definitive number. It was his group. In fact, later on in his ministry, he sent out 70 of his other disciples, and they went out two by two, and they did all kinds of things. But it's very clear that the way he looked at these 12 was very different than the way that he looked at the 70. So when we talk about the 12 disciples of Christ, it is a closed group. It's a finite group of men that Jesus chose. All right, so here's the list. Let's check our papers. Let's put the list up here. Here's the list. Simon, Peter, James, and John, Andrew, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, Thaddeus, Simon, Judas, and a bonus point for Matthias. So check your papers. Now before you score yourself, you might get a couple bonus points in here. Let me tell you why. Several of these guys, and I just put a few up there, a lot of these guys had multiple names. And we're going to go through some of them, and I'll give you some of them. So if you put their other name or other two names or other three names, you might still get a point. So for instance, Simon Peter. Simon is actually his name until he comes across Jesus, who then names him Peter. So if you have Simon, you're okay. If you have Peter, you're okay. If you have Simon Peter, you're still okay. Bartholomew is actually the last name of Nathanael. It's Nathanael Bar-Talamai. Bar-Talamai is transliterated into Bartholomew, but sometimes in the text he's Nathanael, this guy in whom there is no guile, and sometimes he's Bartholomew, but his name is Nathanael Bartholomew. So if you have Nathanael or Bartholomew, you're still okay. Give yourself a point. Thomas up there is sometimes called Didymus. So if you have Didymus, give yourself a point. The second James up there is called James, the son of Alphaeus. And sometimes he's called James the Less, sometimes called James the Lesser. He's also called, in some texts, James the Younger. So if you have any of those, you still get a point. Simon the Zealot is sometimes referred to as Simon the Canaan. So if you have Simon the Canaan instead of Simon the Zealot, make sure to give yourself a point. Thaddeus is referred to, I think if I remember right, in Matthew and Mark, he's Thaddeus. In Luke and John, he's Judas. Different than Judas Iscariot, obviously. But if you put Judas, or if you have both Judas and Judas Iscariot, make sure to give yourself a point. The problem with Thaddeus is that in the King James version, in Matthew chapter 10, he's referred to as Labius, whose surname is Thaddeus. So if you put Labius instead of Thaddeus, give yourself a point. And you're like, never heard of Labius. Go on. So my point in telling you about all these names is that if you didn't get all 12, sometimes I think it's because the names are so confusing and the way they use them back and forth and they flip-flop between all of these different names. Now remember, Judas Iscariot, after he hung himself, in Acts chapter 1, the disciples and all the people there, they voted onto the island a guy named Matthias. And so if you put Matthias down, give yourself a bonus point. So let's score. How many of you would say, I got at least 9? All right, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. And I won't ask who got them all because my pride doesn't let me do that. So anyway, let me show you the four passages that list all of the disciples. And these are the four. So you have Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and then Acts. We don't have a list of all of the disciples in the book of John, even though all of the disciples are named throughout the story in the narrative in John. Acts chapter 1, and we'll be reading that a little bit later. In that passage, it lists off the 11, And then it says, now we got to figure out what to do to fill that number back to 12. So that list is a little bit different. Now, the way that I kind of remember them is sometimes by pairs. And if we could go back to that list, just one. Sometimes it's easy to remember them by pairs because some of these are brothers and some of these go together. Andrew and Peter were brothers, so they can always go together. James and John were brothers, so they go together. And if you remember some of the pairs, it makes it a little bit easier to remember the names and all 12. But what's also interesting is that there are two Simons and there are two Jameses. So if somebody says, what are the names, the 12 names of Jesus, what you could do by doing pairs is say, well, it's Simon, Simon, Andrew, James, James, John, and you're at 6. That's pretty easy. And then you have Matthew, who worked with the money, and you have Judas, who was the treasurer, and so those two are kind of a pair. Can't forget Doubting Thomas. He's pretty famous. So I think we can get to 9 pretty easily. It's really the last 3, like Thaddeus and Bartholomew, that are the hardest to understand, to remember anyway. So maybe you think, well, are there some good ways of remembering this? And we're not going to show the video, okay, Elena? But maybe you've heard of mnemonic devices. It's ways to help you understand and remember certain things, maybe like a poem. Like maybe when you were going to school back in the day, you couldn't remember that north, east, south, west, so you went never eat soggy waffles. And somehow that's easier to remember. And that's actually what my wife did, and still how she tries to go, never eats. Oh, south is down there. Okay, so it's called a mnemonic device. Well, there's been a lot of these over the years that people have done with the disciples, and let me show you one of these poems that maybe will help you remember the 12. Here's how the poem goes. It says, this is the way the disciples run, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas next, and Matthew 2, James the less and Judas the greater, Simon the zealot and Judas the traitor. Now, if you can kind of memorize that, you might be able to remember all 12 together. I have a really fun video I was going to show, but we don't have time to do it. Maybe I'll show it next week. But let's remember that when Jesus chose the 12, he chose them specifically by name, one by one. He chose 12, and he said, come follow me. And these guys, for the next 3 years then, followed Jesus. They watched his miracles. They heard his teaching. They saw what he did. They saw Jesus behind the scenes. And they followed him with all of their lives. We know a little bit about the 12 as a whole. Let me give you 4 pictures of the 12 as a whole before we get to the 9. And each of these are significant as it relates to the importance and centrality of these 12 disciples of Jesus. Here's the first one, Luke 6:13. Here's what it says. And when it was day, he called the disciples and chose from them 12 whom he named apostles. Now, next week, we're going to talk about that word apostle and whether or not it's appropriate to use that term apostle still today in reference to certain leaders. But know that Jesus is the one that he said, you 12, you are now called apostles, which is just a generic word that means sent out one or messenger. You are now apostles. Matthew 19:28 says, truly I say to you, in the new world, when the Son of Man shall sit on his glorious throne, you who have followed me will also sit on 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. There's several passages that deal with how these 12 disciples are going to have an ongoing role in the future. In this passage here specifically, sitting as judges, which makes it even more important that the casting of lots for Matthias, because Matthias then, becoming part of the 12, will have this ongoing role in the future, which is a real bummer for the guy that lost, Joseph Barsabbas. He's like, well, am I like a nobody the rest of my life? He lost the lots, so he's not one of the 12. These 12 will have an ongoing role in the future. So 2 more passages, Revelation 21, and this is describing the new Jerusalem. And if you know, remember that passage, it's the new Jerusalem coming down out of heaven. And it says, on the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them the 12 names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. So to think of these guys in some way having their names etched literally into the walls of heaven, you just realize that there is some significance to Jesus choosing these 12. Last one, Ephesians 2, 19 and 20. And this is similar to how Paul speaks of the apostles as the foundation of the church. He says, "You are no longer strangers and sojourners, but you are fellow citizens with the saints and the members of the household of God." And this is the important part. "Built on the foundation of the apostles and the prophets, with Christ Jesus himself being the cornerstone." So in some way, Jesus envisions this spiritual church that grows on the foundation that the apostles would set and leave as a legacy in their life. So you got to really understand that the 12 is not just like a random 12. And when they die, they have cool tombs here in churches and stuff like that. There is a part that they played not only in the first century, but in the 2,000 years since Jesus and the building of his church, and ongoingly into the future in heaven someday. So the 12 are not just any old group. There is something specific, something grand about these men that Jesus chose. So the reason I'm doing 9 obscure disciples for this week and next is because there are 9 that we know so little about. And really, if you think about the guys on that list, there's probably 4 that we know a lot about and get talked about all the time. We know Peter, James, and John. We hear about Peter, James, and John all the time. And specifically, we hear about Peter. And in all 4 of the lists of the disciples, Peter is listed first, which in Greek always means prominence. He was probably the spokesman for the group. He was the one that most people was probably Jesus' closest friend in the group. And Peter has that prominence. But Peter, James, and John, Jesus would take Peter, James, and John on trips and to see things that none of the other disciples got to see, like on the Mount of Transfiguration. If you remember that, Jesus gets up there, he's transfigured in all of his glory. Well, up there with him were only 3 of the disciples, Peter, James, and John. They were the only ones. Jesus raises this dead girl back to life, and in the room, there's only Peter, James, and John. Even at the end of his life, all the disciples, they go up to the Garden of Gethsemane. He makes them all sit down. Then he says, "Peter, James, and John, I want you to go a little bit further with me." He takes them off to a secluded spot where he prays then with great earnest, but only Peter, James, and John are there to see it. Those are just a few examples. And I've often wondered what the other disciples felt about the perks that the top 3 got. Like, why do they get to go? Why is Jesus always running off with them? You know, what about the rest of us? And we don't really know that answer. All we know is that Peter, James, and John, they saw things, they heard things, they spent time with Jesus in a way that the rest of the disciples did not get to do. So Peter, James, and John, those are pretty easy to remember. And scarcely is the other one that often we talk about, and just how he betrayed Jesus. It's very interesting, and one of the things I'd like to know when I get to heaven is why did Jesus choose Judas to be the treasurer for the group? Wouldn't he seem like the last one to choose? But for some reason, Jesus chose him, which was either like this big oversight by Jesus, or was something like shrewd as a fox moment for Jesus. So if we have 13 disciples, and there's 4 that we really know well, that leaves us 9 that we really don't know all that much about. And I'm just going to take a few minutes on each of them and try to help us all understand a little bit better who they were and what they did. And then to use a little bit of tradition about where they possibly, after Jesus ascends, after the persecution breaks out in Jerusalem, it says all the disciples stayed, but at some point they all went off, did various directions, some to Africa, some north, some argue all the way up into Britain and Ireland. They all go different spots. And they all, 9, all but John, all die as martyrs. Every single one. And that's really interesting. So we'll talk a little bit about that tradition. But I got to kick it into gear. We're never going to get done. Let's begin with Andrew. Andrew is one of the sets of brothers along with James and John. His brother was Peter. And I want to read part of the story. And for a lot of these 9, there's only like 1 story we get about their involvement in this whole ministry of Jesus. And let me just show you one of these stories in John 1. So if you have your Bibles, go with me to John chapter 1, please. John chapter 1. So this is a passage that talks about when Jesus began to call his disciples. John chapter 1, verse 35. It says, the next day, again, John, that's John the Baptist, was standing with two of his disciples, and he looked at Jesus as he walked by and said, behold, the Lamb of God. The two disciples heard him say this, and they followed Jesus. Jesus turned and saw them following and said to them, what are you seeking? And they said to him, Rabbi, which means teacher, where are you staying? He said to them, come and you'll see. So they came and they saw where he was staying, and they stayed with him that day, for it was about the 10th hour. One of the two who heard John speak and followed Jesus was Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. Verse 41, he, and this is important, he first found his own brother Simon and said to him, we have found the Messiah, which means Christ. He brought him to Jesus. Jesus looked at him and said, you are Simon, the son of John. You shall be called Cephas, which means Peter. So Andrew has the distinction of being called the very first disciple that Jesus called to be part of the 12. It was Andrew that was the first. And what's really interesting is that there probably some of you came from liturgical churches, and a lot of liturgical churches, they celebrate Andrew as the first disciple of Jesus, which is really significant. But I want you to notice that first, Andrew was a disciple of John the Baptist, and he's following John the Baptist along. John the Baptist is the rabbi. And when John the Baptist says concerning Jesus, behold the Lamb of God, that's when Andrew, former disciple of John the Baptist, says, I'm going to leave my rabbi John the Baptist, and I'm going to follow this new guy, Jesus. So he made this change from one rabbi to the other. Now, also in this passage, he was the very first one to proclaim Jesus as the Messiah. And, of course, Peter is the one that gets all of the credit all of the time. You know, it's the classic story. Jesus says, you know, who am I? And Peter says, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Well, that comes all the way at the end of the gospel. All the way back at the beginning, his older brother Andrew was already going, this is the Messiah. So Peter, even though he had all of the notoriety and all of the fame, it was really Andrew that was the one that was saying, no, this is the Messiah. He was the one that was instructing Peter from the beginning, this is the Messiah. Unfortunately, for whatever reason, Peter gets all the attention and not Andrew. So we know he was a fisherman like his brother. We know he was from Bethsaida, which is on kind of the northern coast of the Sea of Galilee, which would have been really convenient if you're a fisherman, and they fished there. We also know some other things, very few other things. Let me tell you about a couple of them. One of his most distinctive moments came in John chapter 12, and you can read it later on your own. But here's what happened. A bunch of Greeks came to Jesus, and they wanted to hear about salvation. They wanted to know what this was all about. And when those Greeks came to Jesus, they first came to a guy named Philip, who was one of the other disciples, and Philip's like, I don't know what to do with these Greeks. So it was Andrew that took the Greeks in John 12 and took them to Jesus. It was Andrew that was the very first person that we find, the very first Christian that we find, that understood that salvation would be far more than just for Jews. It would also be for Greeks and Gentiles and people like you and me. Peter, famous Peter, he doesn't get it until Acts chapter 10. Way long time later, early on, Andrew realized the salvation that Jesus is talking about, salvation is in no other name except Jesus. And so when those Greeks came along, he took them right to Jesus. He was the very first one to do that and to understand the extent of that salvation. Tradition says that Andrew traveled north after Jesus ascended. He preached in Asia Minor. He started the churches in Constantinople that still to this day say that Andrew was the founder of the churches in Constantinople. While there, he refused to make sacrifices to heathen gods. And so he was arrested, he was beaten, and he was crucified in a city called Patras. And if you remember the story of Peter, Peter refused to be crucified in the same way as Jesus did. You remember that story? Well, Andrew was the same way. And Andrew, instead of being crucified in a T-shaped cross, he requested, and it was approved, that he would be crucified in an X-shaped cross like this. And there he hung for 3 days, preaching the whole time. Now, part of the interesting parts of this tradition is that people in Scotland, they believe that their ancestors, before they migrated to Scotland, they were in Constantinople. They heard Andrew preaching the gospel. They came to believe, and then they took the gospel all the way to the northern part up there in Scotland. So still to this day, the Scottish flag is this blue flag up here that has Andrew's cross in the middle of the flag, hailing back to how the gospel arrived in Scotland. It was from Andrew, who refused to be crucified in the same way as Jesus. Overall, he seems to be just kind of a humble guy. And somehow he learned to embrace a role that was subservient. He saw his brother getting the notoriety. He saw his brother walking off with Jesus at times, and he doesn't seem to ever have complained about it. All he did, it seems, is choose to serve and not lead. I think there's a lesson, a good lesson about the humility of that and how he must have just worked internally to try to figure out his role in all of this. As far as we know, Jesus never gave him any extraordinary responsibility. All he did was humbly serve, and that was Andrew. The second disciple we're going to talk about today is a guy named James, sometimes called James the Less, which I'm sure he really loved. James the Less, or James the Lesser, in some translations he's called James the Younger, because that word less could refer to stature, like James the Shorter. It could be that he was just younger, we don't really know. But James the Lesser is how he is often referred to. We know that he was the son of Alphaeus, which, by the way, Matthew the tax collector was also the son of Alphaeus, which has made a lot of people believe that James and Matthew were brothers, even though we never find that anywhere in the text, and every other brother is identified. So they probably weren't brothers, as Alphaeus was a pretty famous name. Catholic tradition says that this is the James that wrote the book of James. But we would identify this James very differently. Now, of course, in Catholic tradition, James could not have been the brother of Christ and could not have written the book of James. It's part of their doctrine. So this is the James, but not the same James that wrote the book of James. Perhaps the most telling passage, and we just have very obscure information around this guy. One little story I want to show you in Mark chapter 15. So if you go over to Mark chapter 15, let me show you just one little story from James the Lesser's life. Mark chapter 15. And this really isn't a snapshot of his life directly, but here's what it says. Mark 15, verse 40. And maybe this is seen here before, but let me show you. It says, this is right after the death of Christ, there were also women looking on from a distance, among whom were Mary Magdalene and Mary the mother of James the Younger. Do you see that? Mary the mother of James the Younger. That's James the Less. That's this James that we're talking about. And of Joseph and Salome. When he was in Galilee, they followed and they ministered to him. So there were these women that followed Jesus around. And there were some of these women that were at the cross when Jesus died, and one of them was James's mother. Now, that's very interesting to me because it tells me that James came from a legacy of faith, a heritage of faith. That either his mom came to faith because James was called by Jesus, or maybe James grew up in this house it was maybe a devout house, and he learned about the Messiah. So when Jesus came along and said, follow me, he was all primed because mom, the faith of his own mother. I find that very, very fascinating, and just the effect and the influence that mothers have on their on the spiritual legacy in their own kids. From tradition again, Alpheus, the name Alpheus, was also the name of Joseph, Jesus' father. His brother was named Alpheus. And so there's probably a pretty good likelihood that James, this James, was the cousin of Jesus. Which, if you can imagine, proclaiming your cousin to be the Son of God, that takes some pretty amazing faith. So tradition, here's where James went. After the persecution breaks out in Jerusalem, everybody scatters. James went to Persia, which is modern-day Iran. And there he was martyred. We're not really sure how. There's varying stories. But we do know that the gospel arrived in Persia, in Iran, because James went there. And I think that in the obscurity of James, there's probably a little bit of a lesson for us in that James, even though he was lesser, James was obscure. He was just as much of a disciple as was Peter and James and John. Just as much. And if the Bible is right, and I find that it usually is, James the lesser has his name engraved on a wall in heaven. James the lesser will sit and judge on the throne in heaven someday. And it's a good reminder that even though James the lesser is called the lesser, in the service of Jesus Christ, there is no such thing as lesser. He will never be lesser in heaven for the rest of his life. Never forget that no service to Christ will ever be forgotten in heaven. Our third disciple that we're going to look at today is a guy named Thaddeus, which a 4th century historian named Jerome called the man with three names. He's called Thaddeus, again, as I said before, he's called Thaddeus in Matthew and Mark. He's called, depending on how you look at it, but he's called Judas in Luke. He's referred to as Judas in John. He's definitely in the list in Acts as Judas. But specifically, there are times that it would say, and Judas, and then there'd be like this parenthesis that said, not Judas Iscariot, and then it'd go on with the story. And so I wonder if he didn't go by the name Thaddeus because he got tired of going, my name's Judas, but I'm not that Judas. And so I'm going to go by Thaddeus. That's what I think. So let me show you one of the stories about him in John 14. John 14. And in all of the Gospels, these are the only recorded words of Thaddeus or Judas. John 14. Here's what it says, verse 19. This begins with Jesus. We have some lights on and up and off and on, and this is interesting. So it says, all right, I'm the light of the world, Jesus said. Okay, that's a different passage. Yet, here's what it says, verse 19. Yet a little while, and the world will see me no more, but you will see me. Because I live, you also will live. In that day you will know that I am in my Father, and you in me, and I in you. Whoever has my commandments and keeps them, he it is who loves me. And he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him and manifest myself to him. Verse 22. Judas, and here's one of these parentheses, not Iscariot, said to him, Lord, how is it that you will manifest yourself to us and not to the world? Jesus answered him, if anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and he will come to him and make our home with him. But whoever does not love me does not keep my words, and the word that you hear is not mine, but the Father who sent me. A couple things in this passage is really interesting. It almost feels like Thaddeus interrupts Jesus' sermon. And how close do you have to be to Jesus to interrupt him? I find that really interesting. But I find it interesting that he was really concerned not about the disciples, but he was concerned about everybody else seeing and understanding and believing all that the disciples were privileged to see. And he says, Jesus, how come you're just showing yourself to us? How come you're just telling us these things? What about everybody else? Aren't you going to go tell all of them? I find that very, very fascinating as well. The third thing that I find fascinating in that story is that he seems to somehow buy into the idea that the Messiah was also going to overthrow Rome. And I think most of the disciples would probably have agreed with that. Now, the name Thaddeus means tender one, gentle in spirit. And so MacArthur has a book about the disciples, and in that book, he theorizes that Thaddeus was just a quiet, humble, gentle guy, which is probably why we hear so little about him. Tradition says that after Pentecost, Thaddeus, he took the gospel north. He planted churches in Turkey. Specifically, the church in Edessa says that it was started by Thaddeus in the first century. One tradition says that he was either clubbed to death or axed to death. But if you look at pictures of Thaddeus, and if you Google him later, many of them show a picture. Now, I know the lights are going up and down, but can we turn it down on purpose now? This is actually an axe that he holds in his hand. And there are a lot of depictions of Thaddeus where he holds some kind of a axe or a club in reference to how most people believe that he died. Died at the hands of people who did not want to believe in Jesus. Now, our last disciple today is Matthew. And I guess in a lot of ways, it feels like we know a lot about Matthew. He was a Jewish tax collector. The old King James said that he was a publican, which is another term for tax collector. And just remember that tax collectors were totally despised, completely despised in the first century because they worked for the Roman government. And one of the ways that they enriched themselves was by cheating everybody else out of the money. And what they would do is they would say, you know, Brenda, you owe $100 in taxes is what the Roman government says, when really it's $75 that she has to pay. So they would pocket the difference. And that's how they became very, very rich. He's only mentioned seven times in the whole Bible. Four of them are in the big long list that we have that I showed you before. So let me just show you one of those stories that we know about Matthew in Matthew chapter 9. The book of Matthew was written by this disciple, written by Matthew, the tax collector. And there's a pretty famous story here that you know well, but let me point out a few things in the story. Matthew chapter 9, verse 10, I should say, whatever I said before. So Matthew chapter 9, I actually begin reading in verse 9. It says, this is part of the call of Matthew. As Jesus passed on from there, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax booth. And he said to him, "Follow me." And he rose and followed him. Now just pause for a second. Remember, this was written by Matthew. The story I'm about to read to you is only found in the book of Matthew, written by Matthew. Here's what it says. Verse 10. And as Jesus reclined at the table in the house, that's Matthew's house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were reclining with Jesus and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to the disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" But when he heard it, he said, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I came to call the righteous but not sinners. Why would Matthew be the only one to record this part of the story? It's fascinating to think about Matthew as a guy who throws a party. He decides to follow Jesus. He throws a party. And who comes to the party? Other tax collectors. If you're a tax collector, the only friends you have are the other tax collectors because everybody else can't stand you. So this whole room, this house is filled with tax collectors, with sinners. Matthew is the only one that tells us the story because he wants to so clearly show us Jesus came to save people like me. I love that about Matthew. So the Pharisees, they see Jesus in the story and they say, you know, in their estimation, this is a reflection of Jesus' character. He's sitting with sinners. And Jesus said, "Yep, got me on that one. This is my character. Mercy is what matters. I hang out with broken people because they need to be saved." And so I love that scene there, and it's one of the very few references that we have of anything regarding Matthew, but that he would write that and put it in his story. The other disciples, you know, it's not in Matthew, Mark, or Luke. It's only in it's not in Mark, Luke, and John. It's only in Matthew. And that is so significant to me. because it shows us such a humble man. A man who says, who didn't like try to disguise who he used to be. I find that so fascinating and a real challenge to my own heart. So the legend says that he died as a martyr in Ethiopia. He actually hooked up with other disciples along the way to take the gospel there, and I'll talk about that next week. So these are four of the nine that I'm going to be talking about. And so we have five more that we're going to do next week. Each of them have their own stories. Again, they all died as martyrs for their faith. Most of these guys were hardly more than teenagers when Jesus called them. And imagine that. Imagine having your 18-year-old son, in this case, son. Jesus says, come follow me. And he just leaves. Leaves the family business, as Andrew and Peter did. They just get up and leave to follow Jesus. And there's a part of me that I just wonder if, you know, if I was in the boat fishing along with James and John, and Jesus comes along and he sees me out in the boat, would he have seen some quality in me that he says, I want you and my crew? And then I wonder if I would have enough courage to say, I'm in. Like if you put yourself in the place of these disciples, you're sitting at your job, the tax collector, you're sitting at your booth, you're doing your work, Jesus comes along, he says, follow me. Do you really believe that you would get up in that moment, leave it all, leave the money there, and go? And when you try to put yourself in the position of these guys, you realize that there is something extraordinary about them. Even all the way to the end of their life, again, every single one of them dies as a martyr. Would you not only leave the tax booth, leave your job to follow Jesus, but then would you leave your country to take the gospel to all these different places? And then, when it came down to the end of your life, you either sacrifice to the God or we're going to kill you. What would you do? There's something sobering about the reflection when you see these guys' lives and you reflect back on your own life and your own qualities, your own character, and your own depth of faith that makes you go, these are some extraordinary men. And I think in a lot of ways it helps us understand why they not only had first century prominence, but for 2,000 years the church has been built upon these guys and their spiritual legacy. But there will be a time in the future where we will see these 12 guys sitting on the throne of heaven judging the men and women of the world. I can't wait to meet James the Lesser. I want to shake Matthew's hand and just say, thank you for putting the story about sinners in your gospel. And just to hear about all of that. Hey, one last note. You get all the way to the end of the book of John, one of the things that it says is that if we wrote down everything Jesus did while he was here, the world would not doesn't have enough room to contain all of those books. I want to hear those stories. I wonder if these guys, not only while Jesus was on earth, but after they left and they traveled and they were missionaries in all of these spots, I want to hear what happened. I want to hear those stories that led up to each of them being arrested, many of them tortured. One guy from next week was cut in half, sawed in half for the gospel. I want to hear how faith develops to the point that, you know what, cut me in half. That's better than giving up my Lord. And that's what those guys did. Next week we'll come back and we're going to look at some very interesting things about the word apostle. We're going to look at some broader ideas related to the disciples, and then we're going to look at these other five obscure men.